व्यास शंकर मध्यमाम् अस्मत् आचार्य पर्यन्ताम् वंदे गुरु परंपराम् श्रुति श्रुति पुराणानाम् आलयं करुणालयं नमामि भगवत्पाद शंकरं लोकशंकरं शंकरं शंकराचार्यं केशवं बादरायणं सूत्र भाषकृतौ वंदे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः हरिः ओम तत्सत् श्री गुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ओम ओम सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावतीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ओम शांति 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 ही। So namaste to all of you. In the last two classes, we have been discussing the Purushartha Nishchayaha, which is called as the common pursuit or the human goals which one has to accomplish or accomplishes during the time the person is taken birth and the person passes away. This is a very, very fundamental pursuit which every human being only has it. It is not available for any other living beings on this universe. So that makes this pursuit as one of the most sought after for us to realize the ultimate truth. So there are four Purusharthas which we discussed, which is called the Artha Purushartha. Then we have Kama Purushartha, then Dharma Purushartha, and then Moksha Purushartha. Now, the first three are things to miss, which we have to use it or which we have to experience it to arrive at the Moksha also. Because life itself is a teacher, it's an experience where one has to pursue artha, because you need security, you need money, you need these things to live in this life, in this world. And you cannot say that I should live like a beggar. You got to pursue your interests, you got to pursue these things to achieve the common goal, which is artha. But at the same time, we have to understand that this artha should not be pursued to the core, like where you feel that this is the only pursuit in your life. There has to be a pursuit to the extent what is required for you to be secure. And that security is something which only you can decide. What is enough for me is something which you have to decide, depending upon your capacity and your passion for other things. Likewise, Shastram also says that even the Kama Purushartha also, the desire also has to be, there should be there. If a desire is not there, then there is no motivation for you to do anything. It is like sitting at home and watching TV. You say you don't want to go to work. So it is not a desire. There is every desire, even that's a desire also. To sit at home and watch TV and do nothing also is a desire. Some people pursue it. Some people say, no, I can't do this. I had to do something else. So they go and work, they earn money, they do other work, they pursue other desires, dreams, they want to travel the world. They want to experience it. It's not desire. But also understand we should understand that these desires also has to come to an end one day, because you cannot be chasing, you cannot be having this asai or this uncontrollable desire to keep on enjoying, keep on having kama. There'll come a time when this also will get bored, because you have to keep pursuing new things. Same thing will not keep attracting you, right? So one has to develop. Just like I gave the example last week about the sweet or the gulab jamun which you have. Initially, when a sweet is introduced, or when you buy a new car also, say if a new model of car is introduced, you get fascinated. You want to drive in that car for maybe a week, month, a year. After that time, another model comes. Then you lose interest in this model, because now it is an old car and you start comparing this car to the next model. So you want to upgrade, but you cannot upgrade because you don't have the money, and you know that you cannot do it also due to a lot of reasons. So you are stuck with that. So your enjoyment is also limited to the extent of that object which is going to give you. And any object we saw is not going to give you permanent happiness. It is only going to give you happiness to the extent of what it is supposed to give you. After that, the object will not be likable to you. You will move away from the object and another object will attract your attention. So this is the Kama Purusharta which we saw also. It has got a limitation also. Then we saw Dharma Purusharta, where a person is already done artha, is already has got security, and he has got enough wealth, he has got our desires in some way or the other. Now he wants to do charity work. He says, I want to, now I got enough money in my home, I'm sort of over the desire aspect now. I want to spend my rest of the time doing bhajans, kirtans, visiting temples, helping people, doing charity work, these kind of things. So a person now continues to do this kind of work. The question may be asked again, this also is a limiting desire, because how long will you keep doing charity? How long will you keep supporting people? How long will you keep constructing temples? And how long will you keep traveling to different kshetras to get punyam? And what will you do? You'll get punyam, yes. You'll get all these things which you do, good things. They are going to earn you punya. They're going to earn you good fortune. And how are you going to use it? How will you account for this? And who is going to keep track of it? And how will you enjoy this? Is a question. So even that also, when the person starts asking a question, look, I have been doing this charity work for so many years now. I don't know what I'm going to get out of it. Or it is just like, I want to do this till I pass away. So this also is a desire, or this also is a passion, a karma, which a person does because of one's own interest. Somebody follows security. Somebody will say, look, I want to be the richest man in this whole universe. I want to be like Bill Gates. And somebody will say, this is my role model. And one will chase up to that end. And if he's not satisfied, because he's got a vision. He's got a visionary. He said the vision, the motto of the company, motto of the person. Business, you have all these things. So you keep chasing it, and then you don't rest till I get to the top. But the whole lifetime is spent in this. The whole life, he will possibly pass away, inheriting all this wealth will be there, without knowing the purpose of his own existence in life. Same thing also, a person will keep chasing desires, kama also. Acquiring wealth, acquiring different types of things, going, traveling around, meeting all his physical desires, intellectual desires, all the desires, which a person wants to, because we have a physical body. A physical body has got all, we got different limbs, and each limbs gives different types of pleasure, right? So we got sense of touch, smell, taste, right? So all of them are there. They operate in their own capacity. If you want to see something, you got to use your eyes. So the eye, the netra, dharma, is that it will give you the pleasure for that dharma which the netra is supposed to give you. You cannot say that I can experience the something with my nose. The nose can give you only that sensory pleasure which only a nose can give. If you want to smell good things or smell a good pal paisan being made or day paisan being made, which is cooked, you have the nose. You can see it being made, but you cannot sense it because it's not, color can be attractive to you. But you can only sense it when the nose picks up the smell or the good fragrance, and then you say, ah, this is a very good smell. So the nose, dharma, dharma of nasika also is independent of the eye. They all operate independently. Likewise, the taste, jihva also. The taste also operates independently. The touch operates independently. You cannot say that the touch and the nose has got connection. They are all connected through one common thing called the mind. But they all operate independently, and nobody tells other organ how to operate, because it has got its own way of operating, and it has got its own intelligence. Like if you have a physical body, we got different parts of the body. We got the heart, got liver, got kidney, got hands, legs, all the different parts of the body. They all operate on their own capacity. They don't ask anybody. Does the heart go and ask the liver, hey liver, are you going to work today or not? It doesn't ask. It works independently. It pumps blood every day. 24/7 it pumps. Likewise, the kidney also does its job independently without asking the heart, hey look, are you going to do this work today or not? So all these things which are there, they operate on their own capacity independently. And the intelligence is actually already there. Likewise, if you look at any animal also, any animal which is there, it has got its own intelligence built. The Bhagavan, the Srishti, has made it such a way that its intelligence is already built. An animal, when it is born, if you see, I lived in Africa for many years, I have seen in the wild, a deer or an antelope gives birth to a fawn, and it's just coming out and it struggles to walk. It has to, as soon as it comes out of the mother's womb, it has to walk within 2 minutes. And the mother will try to do everything possible to encourage to walk, because there are predators waiting there for watching this process, and they are waiting for any fawn which is not able to pick up in the time frame. So when the fawn comes out, it's actually trying to do on its own. It within 2 minutes it starts to catch up with this mother. Its own family, and start to run. Now this, the mother hasn't taught the fawn to say how to walk on 4 legs, or what it should do to protect. It has got instinct already built in that it has to run, it has to live its life independently. Likewise, any animal you see, any object, a monkey also, it doesn't need intelligence to jump from tree to tree. It's natural. So the Srishti has got its duty that everything is according to the level of intelligence. It does its job automatically. The fish also, when it is born, it swims automatically in the water. The mother doesn't tell the fish, you hold its hand and starts to teach swimming. So what I'm trying to say here is that intelligence or the consciousness or the awareness is present in every living being. And this awareness is to be known. Now you, we being human beings, are able to understand every other living beings. We are able to have this God's unique intellect called the Buddhi or the Viveka to discriminate between truth and non-truth. We can distinguish very clearly. All the other beings apart from the human beings don't have this Viveka. They cannot say, no but animal says that I am a monkey or I am a donkey. It can't say anything because it doesn't have the capacity to express anything. The human beings are the only species which can express itself and can distinguish itself from other beings. That I am not this, I am this. I am not a donkey, I am not a monkey, I am not a fish, I am not a tiger, I am a human being. So this human being which is there, this is what is the ultimate. So you have to know who you are. You know that you are a human being. But you have a view that this human being is a person made of physical body. I have got a physical body which has got two arms, two legs, one head, two eyes, all those things which are there. You can identify yourself. When you look at the animal also, you see that it also has got same thing. It is no different from you. Then the question may come to be asked, okay, look, if there is a similarity between them and myself, then what am I different here? Why has the Bhagavan, Srishti, has given me a human being, a human birth? If the purpose was to take birth, enjoy, and then pass away, then that may not be the real intention. So this question always comes to a person. We have it in the back of the mind, but somehow it is not coming into the front. Background is all running around that, okay, look, I am a human being, what am I doing in this, all this. So the Shastram actually helps you to look at it. Shastram tells that, look, I will help you analyze and understand who you are. I will tell you what is the real nature of you as a human being. For every other thing, there is available knowledge. If you want to read physics, you've got a physics book available. If you've got a chemistry, if you want chemistry gyanam is available. If you've got a music gyanam, you go to a music guru, is available to you. Every object, every knowledge which is there is available to you, which is external to you. You hear, you sing, everything, right? It's all through external objects only. If you look at it, the Bhagavan itself has been very, very shrewd in giving us birth, that all our organs are only external looking. There's no organ which is internal looking. Eyes are looking externally. Ears are outside, nose outside, hands. There is no part of the body which is inside. The only part which is there, which is the mind, which is your innermost essence. So for that, you have to somehow turn your attention from the outside objects to the inside objects. And there is no other pramana available which tells us clearly that this is the way you should look at it. So, the ultimate aim of a human being or a human pursuit is moksha or moksha artha, which is moksha purushartha, which is freedom from bondage. So, we saw what is bondage. Bondage means by birth or generally we are not actually bonded. But see, we have a view that we are tied to somebody or the other. It is because of our ignorance, because of our view that somehow we are not free. Because we get entangled emotionally with so many other things. We forget, we don't know the difference between duty and attachment. So when you say a duty, you do it as you are doing a role play. You may be a father, you may be a a mother, it could be a brother, or it could be a friend. It could be any doing many roles. In a day, you'll be doing many, many roles. If you go to the office, you're a worker. For another worker, you'll be a manager. So all these are roles executed in a day. But if you get attached to the role, then you become that person. And you start to think like that person. Thereby, you get to get affected by the roles, by what is coming with them. So the Shastram says that, look, you do your duty, that every role has got a role play, a list of responsibilities, you do that. But do not get entangled with the other emotional aspect of it. So when you get emotionally entangled, when you say that, okay, I am going to mix my duties and attachments together, or I am seeking my happiness in that person being happy, then if the person is not happy, then you also become unhappy. Whereas every person has got its own karma, every person operates on its own dharma. You can only take the horse to the water. You cannot force the horse to drink it. You can say, you can try. You can try it also. But, so what we should try to do is not get emotionally entangled in this process. So this is what Shastram tells us, that do your duty. Karmaniva adhikaraste mahafaleshu kadachan. So you only have a right to do duty only, and mahafaleshu kadachana. You do not have a right over the fruits of the action. It is logical to accept or to expect that there will be some results. But you do not cling over to the root, to the fruits of the results. If I don't get it, how will I take it is a question. If you do an action, there is going to be a result, definite result. It may be immediate result, or it could be a result which will come in the future which we don't know. Some punyam will be there and it will come to you in some way or the other. And this adrishta phalam, we should talk about, it cannot be quantified. Adrishta phalam can be quantified because you get immediate happiness and you can see that. But adrishta phalam, or that which is cannot be seen, it is an indirect benefit which will come later when the time is ready. But if the result doesn't come to you in the right order, how will you accept it is a question. Will you get dissatisfied? Or will you get overly excited? Is the real nature of how do you accept results. So here what it tells is that we should have a samatva buddhi, where we accept results in equanimity. Not worrying about what it is going to give you. If it gives you happiness, okay, take it. If it's not going to give you happiness, going to pain, accept that also as prasada buddhi. So we saw the karma yoga also in the previous class, how the karma yoga has got the five buddhis are being described. So I'm just summarizing to see that chapter, that topic is closed. So the karma yoga is also an attitude where the person does the karma with the right attitude. Anybody can do any karma. But if the karma is not done, or the action is not done with the right attitude, then that action is not going to give you any result. It may give you, but you will not be able to do anything. So, attitude is important. And if you do with the right attitude, it will not bind you. That action will not bind you, because if you do any action without knowing the true essence of the action, that action is going to bind you and you will become bound by it, and thereby samsara starts. Samsara is like a never-ending cycle of birth and death, because you as individual have got this dehatma buddhi, which you think that I am the body, mind, sense complex and nothing else. Because in the karma yoga, you slowly transcend that view and you say, look, I am no doubt, I am doing this action with all my body, mind, sense, everything I am doing. but I am not doing this for myself. I am doing this to you as Ishwar. I am surrendering this to you. And if you give me good things, I'll accept you. If you give me pain, I'll also accept you. Because it is my prarabdha. My prarabdha is already written that I have to go through this. Nobody can change my prarabdha. They can only reduce. So this alpa prarabdha also is a big prarabdha, which can be overcome by prayer, by some mantras, or by doing good things. But if your prarabdha is very strong, you cannot do anything. You have to accept it. And nobody can come and change your prarabdha also. If somebody comes and tells you, look, I am going to change your fate, I am going to change your destiny, you do this, so many mantras you do, so many, you know, donation you give, you do this kind of activities, and I can make you free completely. If such a person comes and tells you this, you can just go to the person, namaskara, and then walk away. Because in reality, that person is actually not giving me the truth, the real advice. You are already born with a prarabdha. When the person is born, his or her prarabdha has already started. And one has to live this life just to finish it. That is why we have got a human life. If you don't have the human life, means there's no prarabdha karma required. The moment your karma is over, prarabdha, you can't stay in this puloka for even for 1 second. Even though you want to stay also, you may desire to live 100 long years, you may not be able to even stay for 1 second also. Because for that body, for that life, that karma is already over. So there's another set of prarabdha ready to come, for which you will take one more janma, physical body. We will go through the concept of prarabdha karma, sanchita karma, and agami karma later when we go through this. Because one needs to understand what is, first of all, karma, number one, an action. Then one needs to understand what is karma yoga first, which is the attitude of doing the karma with the right attitude. Then you will be able to understand these three different types of karma, and each of them, how they are affected, how the karmi looks at the karma, how the karma yogi looks at the karma, and how this is all connected to the birth and death of the body, and how this is connected to the moksha also. So we saw in the last class, the karma yoga, the five different buddhis, we saw them. Now, why does a karmi do the activity? The karmi does an activity. A karmi is a person who is a doer. Simple example is, a doer is a person who does things. We all get up in the morning. We all do things. Our whole life, our full 24, you know, till we go to sleep, 11:30 or 11 o'clock, whatever you would like to sleep. It's a full jam-packed activity list. Always busy. Day in and day out, we just churn out actions after actions after actions after actions. There is no time to even think and recollect as to why I am doing this action. And if I don't do this action, what will happen also, we don't have time to think. Because we have got all sorts of activities lined up all day. So there is no time to even sit back and relax and to say, look, I am doing this karma. What am I doing this karma for what? What is the real purpose of doing this karma? You may say, okay, I want to do this for enjoying artha. I want to see security. So you keep continuing doing the job, same job day in and day out for 25-30 years. You travel worldwide. Do all these activities, you acquire one property, two properties, three properties, you have investment shares, securities, your overseas investments, everything you got. But after that, you still do not have the, you can't ask a question, should I stop or not stop? Because when you get into the cycle, you will not be able to stop it. So you continue. So the moksha is that artha, that pusharthaha, which cannot be attained. You cannot go and grab saying that today I am going to sit and get moksha pusharthaha. I am going to sit and understand what is moksha pusharthaha, or I am going to get this moksha also. Artha you can get it. Physically you can get it. Security is available in the form of property, progeny, relatives, relationships, social connections, all available. We belong. Man is a social animal. So it has to live in society, and how much you depend is up to you. And all these objects which you saw, they're all fleeting objects. They are not going to give you permanent happiness. They're all come and go. Everyone who has come here, including us, we all have our own prarabdha karmas. They are all living their life to finish their karmas. But the coming together of people, husband, wife, children, they are also determined by your previous karma also. Otherwise, why would you get married to only one person, specific person? Why not so many people? You can have, say, you say, I got eyes. I can see hundreds of beautiful women. I can choose anybody you want. You can try it. But there's only one person destined for you. Likewise, only one wife is destined for you. Correct. And same thing on children also. Children also is the birth of a children, the way they are brought about, the way they grow up, everything is also predetermined. There's nothing, if you think that I am the person responsible for that, it is a wrong assumption. They all have come with their own karmas. We are only the facilitators. We only facilitate or encourage them to grow in the right manner. That is all we do. But ultimately, if you take ownership of their karma, nothing you can do about it. This is what Shastram says, that every moment a person is born, that person already has got a set of karmas listed already there. The big list is already there. What is going to do at 10 years, what is 11 years, 12 years, 15 years, 20 years, 30, 50, everything is already given there. We don't know about it. Neither the person doesn't know about it. But it's already preordained. So understanding this helps us, manage the raga dveshas, like the likes and dislikes, because we don't like certain things. We always have a liking for something or a disliking for something. If you have a view about how this is all determined, then our raga dveshas are under control and our mind is under control. Otherwise, we always have expectation that we should live like me. Or why is this person not like this? We were living like this before. Look at our ancestors, how they were living. How I was living a life. Look at these people, how they are living life. They are, so you have a, you lament, you criticize, you have a view that they are not living the life what you want. They got their own lifestyle, they have this. And they also learn, the children also learn, or the people around you also learn, how you live is important. If you live a dharmic life, if you live a life of dharma, enjoined, and you follow all the artha, kama, and dharma, inconsistent dharma, then people also will come and get attached to you in the same capacity. All the other things will disappear. Just like a magnet, when you keep the magnet, right, all good things attract. See, there are a lot of things are there, objects are there. Only the iron thing gets stuck there, correct? Because they have got an affinity to attract only those things which are there. So the moksha has to be understood in terms of perspective of happiness. Happiness is something which we all seek, want to be happy, but we are constrained by our lack of understanding of what is happiness. We search for happiness outside the objects, which is progeny, children, security, dharma, artha, kama, everything we pursue. But all these objects keep changing every time. So you also keep changing every day. And your happiness also keeps changing every day also. One day you are very happy. Next day you are not happy at all. for some days, some weeks will not be happy. For some years will not be happy also. Always very, very dissatisfied. Whereas other days you are very happy. So happiness is not a state of mind also. People say that, you know, happiness is, you know, my mind is very happy. It's not like this. Happiness is not a state of mind. Happiness is satya, it's truth. It is your perspective of what you understand is happiness is wrong. Some may say, look, I am not happy in this country. This country is not good. This environment is not good. Let me go to some other place and stay there. Unfortunately, what happens is, like, you know, same thinking, same thoughts, same mind. Everything goes there into a new environment. And what do you do there? You replicate the same thing. Because your thoughts cannot change. Your attitude cannot change. Your perspective cannot change. So how come the situation is going to change? It may alleviate to some extent some problems, but it's not going to take away your wrong perception. So wrong perception is the understanding that who you are. I am a limited person. I'm not happy. I am small. All this superimposition which you have about your own thing is what is the cause of unhappiness, which you also saw last class. So today we are going to talk about, or just introduce, a topic called Brahman or reality. There are many words that describe the word called reality or Brahman. You can describe as consciousness, awareness, fullness, happiness, reality. All have got the same meaning. But there's only one reality which has got different names. This whole prapancha or this whole jagat is what? It's just names and forms only. Name, form and function. There's nothing else in this world. If you take our own example also, you'll have a name. You have a name, your father has given a name, you have a name. And you have a form, male or female, I'm short, 5 feet 6 inches, 5 feet 7 inches, I'm so stout. All this you can describe yourself very clearly. So you got a name, you got a form, and you also got a function. Like, what do? Your function is there, which is artha, kama, dharma is there. It's a function. I'm a human being. I live in this world. I do these things. Likewise, every object in this world also has got a purpose. Even an inanimate object like a table also. A table is called what? It's a name called table. And a table has got a form. There's got one table, one top there. You've got four legs there. And there's a drawer which is there. You can describe. It has got a form. And it has got a function also, that it is used for writing, sitting there and writing books, notes. Or if you're using a table, you'll be using it. You can call it a chair. Even so, every object in this world is a component of these three things only. Nama, Rupa, Karma. Which is, Nama means name, Rupa means form, and Karma means function. And all these three are words. So they are all called words because you have to say something to express something. You cannot keep quiet and say, table. So you have to say, the table has to come out, then only people can understand the table. Your eyes can see. You can visualize things. But one has to say the word table for other person to know that, okay, you are talking about a table, or you are talking about a chair, or you are talking about you, him, her, this, that. See, we have so many words. So a word in Sanskrit is called the Padam. Why the word Padam? Padam also means a feet also. Or Padam Niko. That which takes us close to something. Just like you use a foot to walk and arrive at a place. Likewise, the word also indicates a meaning or an object or something about the word. If I see a cow, first of all, the word cow has to come from your cow has to come first. Then you visualize a cow saying, okay, that is the cow has got a body, has got a tail, has got four legs. But the form of the cow is already imagined in your mind already. You cannot think of anything which is, you cannot think about it. You cannot say a word if you're not thought about it. If I describe you an object which you have not even heard about it, you will ask, well, what is that object? I have not seen it. So, for you to say anything, there should be a thought on it. So the thought is the first process which comes to you, and then the thought actually frames the image of the object. And the object is expressed by a word called the Padam, which is the word. Padyate iti anena padam. So the word Sanskrit padam means padyate iti anena padam. Means that which something is arrived at is called padam. Means you arrive at the meaning of something using the word. So just like the word cow, table, chair, tree also. We have the word called Brahman, reality, consciousness, awareness, happiness, fullness. They all are words which describe a particular thing or a particular phenomenon. But we don't know all these words indicate the same or not. Shastram says that all these words are the same. They appear as different words, but in reality as only one. Just like the manifestation of us living beings, there are more than human beings, animate objects, inanimate objects, stavaram, jangamam, we have all those things. They all are different, but they all are coming from only one source of truth, which is the Sat or the existence. It's only one truth appearing as many. And ultimately all of them, they go and merge into only one reality. Even though they may appear as divided, but in reality they are not separate. They are only one. To give an example, I've got a gold ring here. You also have a gold ring. I call this a ring because the word I have given is a ring. Tomorrow I don't like this ring. I will go to the goldsmith and tell, look, I have been wearing this for many years now. It's gone. The color is faded now. I need to get a new model. So you go to the goldsmith. And the goldsmith takes the gold back. He gives you a new ring. Now, the ring may not be the same shape as what I am wearing now. It may be a different shape. So what has changed? The name has changed. The form has changed. The function has changed. Because I may not wear the ring anymore. And I will say, let me add a few more quantity of gold, and I want to wear a bracelet instead of a gold, a ring. So this object which was there has now transformed itself into a bracelet. So name ring, name bracelet, form ring, form bracelet, function ring, which was in my fingers, has now gone into my hand, which is a different. So the function is different now, because the bracelet now is actually doing different things. Because people can see now, if I have a small ring, nobody can notice it. If I have a big bracelet, and if I wear a half shirt, then people can see that, oh, you've got a new bracelet. So it looks good. So the object has changed, the nama, rupa, karma has changed. But has the essence of gold changed? What is the underlying truth in all the three things? The gold. But we never see the gold. We never see the goal. We only see the forms and names and function. So, just like when you give the gold ring back to the goldsmith, what does it do? He actually takes it back, he converts it, he burns everything into one lump, big lump of gold. So it has gone back to its original state. Now the names, forms and the function are already embedded in the gold lump. It has gone from an unmanifest stage. Manifestation is what? Appearance. As nama rupa karma. It has gone from that stage into an unmanifest stage, which is called the gold. So which is not seen by you. Because now when it's a lump of gold, you say, look, it's just a gold, bar of gold. So when you go to Dubai, people buy this bar of gold. They buy big thick bar. And then when you buy the bar of gold, we only buy a kilo. Right? We say, okay, this bar of gold is so many grams, so much of dollars, we just buy. But we have no idea how much of chain it can produce, or how much of ring it can produce. But you go to the goldsmith and you say, look, I got this bar of gold. And you tell the goldsmith. Immediately he'll tell you, look, you can actually make one big chain, two gold rings, and some leftover will be there, which I can make a small, something can do. Now this person, how does he see things? If you look at the bar of gold, for us, it is a bar of gold. For that person, it's actually knowledge, because he's already got the knowledge how to make it. So the knowledge of creating the ornament from the gold, the process of giving, of creating, the name and form, the functions are already embedded in the gold itself. But you don't see it, I don't see it. Likewise, this universe, you see in different multitude of forms and colors and objects. It is all name, form and functions. You take any example. You can validate with your own example. Any example, any object you see in your house, you pick an object and you say, you have to call it a name. And you have to give it a form, because it has to have a form. The eyes can see only form. Arupa darshanam is not possible. Only rupa darshanam is possible. Ekarupa darshanam or anekarupa darshanam is only possible. Arupa darshanam is not possible for us, because we cannot see anything which is. If I tell you Bhagavan is there, you see him. You say where? Because you want to see where the Bhagavan is. Instead, if I ask a question where the Bhagavan is not there, then you say, look, okay, the view is different. Somebody will ask, where is Bhagavan? So, when you say, where is Bhagavan? You will say, okay, he is actually in this temple, in this, I got a temple here, I got this here, I got this here. But the same question can be put in another way, saying that where the Bhagavan is not, means your perspective of the view changes completely. Now you see the Bhagavan in every rupam, everywhere you see. There is nowhere is not available for us. That's why in Tamil we call, there's a word called Iraivan. So people who are Tamilians, I think most people are Tamilians here in the group. So if I say the word Iraivan, so the word is called Irai plus Avan. Word. Irai Avan means that Lord which is scattered everywhere. Ingum Irainthu Kedappan Iraivan. That which is scattered everywhere is called Irai. He is not available in one place. If you can pinpoint a place saying that he is only available in this place, but it is not available everywhere. So this is the vision. This is the vision of the Shastra. This is the vision of the one reality, which is appearing in multiple forms in multiple universes. So Brahman is a word for reality. So we'll use the word reality, because reality is the ultimate, is the word we want to use. And that is ultimate truth, which cannot be anything else. Just like the gold is absolute truth. And from the gold only, all those things which are coming is availability. You got the gold ornaments, you got gold ring, gold uttiyanam, whatever names and forms you call, it has got all its origin only from one source. So ultimately, when everything you trace it back, it has to go to only one source, one satyam, which is called the gold. Likewise, even the pot and the clay also. An example given Vedanta is the Ghatabhashya. So Ghatabhashya means, like, you know, it says there's a very detailed topic called Ghatabhashya. It talks about the Ghata means a pot. And a pot, if I go to your house, you will see a different type of pot. One small, long pot we'll see. Long head. Somebody may have a small pane, which is a round one. So different shapes are available. And we call it as, you know, short, you know, long one, big ones, short, all the same, we give the names. Right? And they are also names given in the shop. Right? If you go to the shop also, they will say, look, this pot is called this. There is a name for it. So when you go to the market and sell it, people have to identify a brand name. You have to have a brand name. Right? So you have to put a name to the pot so that, you know, when you talk about that name, oh, this is the pot. Name of this means it comes in this color, size, so and so. So again, the name and form and function comes in the picture. So any object you take is actually reduced to these three things only. But the source of the pot is only one display. If I break a pot in your house, if the pot breaks in your other house, ultimately what? The pot, the person is going to take everything away. He's going to go back and say, look, let me take this whole thing away and I'll make another pot for you. So the pot loses the identity as a pot and it goes back to its original status as clay. Likewise, the space also is a we have. The space we have, we break it, says we have bedroom space. I got a 4-bedroom house. I got a living hall. All this is broken up. Right? So the space is broken up into multiple parts depending upon what you think is space. So this is my space. Sometimes you will see when you discuss with your wife also, they will say, this is my space. So you cannot sit in that place. This is my area, my space. Give me space. Then you talk to the kids, they will say, give me space. Means what? You don't want to interfere. Don't come into my area. Or don't interfere into my aspect of give me space. Or leave me alone. Give me space. So space is very, very misused or misunderstood way, just like any other topic also. So we have this view called this different space areas, depending upon our understanding. Tomorrow you don't like the house you're staying. You want to raise the whole building. You say, look, I'm going to build a new house. So the space has gone where now? The space has ultimately gone into a bigger space. Space is space. because the space cannot be contained in one place. Space is pervading everything. But we have a view that I can segregate space into this. So just like all the objects which are there have got a name, function. Bedroom space also has got a name. Say it's a bedroom space. So it's got a name called bedroom space. And it's got a form. You say I got a long bedroom. And I got a walk-in wardrobe. I got this. I got a gym. Many things I have got. So you can describe. And it's got a function also that you can do multiple things in that. Correct. So it can double up as many things. It can be a gym room, can be a powder room, can be a lot of things are there. So you have different areas for different things. A puja area, you've got a dining area. So they all have got names, functions, it's got a form. So in our day-to-day life also we see that we have all these things which are available to you as an object of perception or an object of use. Our own physical body also is like this. Our physical body also is made of all these things. We call them as hand. It's a name. It's got a form. Right? You can identify a form also. It's got five fingers. It's joined to the elbow. All these things you can describe. And it has got a function also that the hand can do certain things. So every part of the body which you can visualize or which you can understand through biology has got a function, a name, and has got a job. Just like outside. So that thing which is already known to you cannot be the truth. So the truth is something which we cannot know or that we had arrived at is what we are trying to do. So the jagat or the objects which you see cannot say that they are unreal. They are real, but they are not absolutely real. They are seemingly real because they seem to come and go away, but they are not absolutely real for you to enjoy permanent happiness. See, if an object has to be given, has to be there to give you happiness, it has to be always like this. It cannot change. Right? If you have an object today, then it has to give you the same happiness every day for the rest of your life till you pass away. But it is not, because these objects cannot give you that happiness. So that which cannot give you permanent happiness cannot be classified as happiness. So you have to find something which can give you permanent happiness. That which does not change is what we are seeking for. So, the reality also is called the word existence. Existence is a word also used to describe reality or the truth to something. Something has to exist first, then only you can actually describe it. You cannot describe a thing which is non-existent. First of all, there's no thing called non-existent at all. There's no thing called non-existence because even the word non-existence also is called existence. So you have to describe the word existence also in non-existence. If I just say non, you'll ask me what is non, so I have to say existence. So existence presupposes knowledge. A knowledge of a thing or an object is available to you because it exists first. You cannot describe anything which is not existing at all. If table is not there, you cannot just visualize, say, something called table. You have to first have a knowledge about table. And possibly existing in some way. It was physically available to you, or you would have visualized a table in your thought. You cannot visualize or you cannot say that a man has got two horns. It's not possible because it is not existing. It's not real. But you can visualize your dreams. You can have all these capabilities, all these things are possible in dreams. But in reality, it is not possible. So the existence presupposes knowledge. So a knowledge of a thing always happens when this existence. From existence or from this ultimate truth, all the objects, names and forms come. And we give them a different names. Just like the example I gave you about the gold and the ring, the form, the ornaments which are there. They all have different purposes, they have different names, they have different functions. But they all owe their ultimate substance is called gold. Without the gold being there, there is no question of having any of these names and functions and forms. Just like an example also we give Vedanta is a water and a wave. When you go to the beach, you'll see a wave, you'll see the foam, you'll see small waves, big waves, 1 meter wave, 2 meter waves, you all describe it. You all see it. Sometimes you see there's no wave at all. The stillness of water comes. Waves, absolutely water is still. You all see this. All these ultimately are non-separate from water. The wave itself is not separate from water. Wave is just an appearance of the water. The foam is an appearance of the water. If the water was not there, then there'll be no wave, there'll be no stillness, there'll be no foam. Correct. So, the waves, the foam, and other things, they all ocean, the name ocean also, has got its existence only in the word, in Satyam called water. Without the water being there, there cannot be a name called ocean. And without the ocean name, there cannot be waves. There cannot be something called a foam, which is there. Likewise, our own physical thing also, as human being or the living being, we also do not exist independently outside of this existence, of this truth called Brahman. We also belong to one Satyam, which is a truth called the reality. But because of our ignorance, because of our lack of knowledge or lack of understanding, we are seeing this Dvaita Buddhi or this separation as something different from this, from that truth. So Shastram as a Pramana helps us to arrive at that truth. And it uses different prakriya or the methods. The prakriya is called a method of arriving at that truth or arriving to describe what it is. Just like if you have a health issue, go to the doctor and you describe your problem. The doctor has to use a methodology to arrive at what could be the problem. So he asks you a question, okay, do you have a headache? You say no. Do you have a tummy ache? You say no. You have cold? They ask you questions based on his experience and knowledge. Because he's trying to arrive at the real truth of what is the problem. Then he's giving you a medicine based on what he thinks could be the problem. Right. Likewise, the Shastram also tells you, he also gives you the same vision by asking, okay, are you this? One second. Raghu, can I call you back? I'll call you back, okay? Okay, bye. That's my brother from India. So the Shastram also tries to do the same thing by its Pramana. So it's got its own logical way of explaining things. It also uses a method called Prakriya or a method by which it tries to bring you close to the truth. So the word Padam, as I come back to the old method, the Padam is Padyate iti anena iti Padam. That by which the word brings you close to the truth is a word. So the padam also is you walk with your feet and you arrive at a place. So without walking, you cannot go to a place, right? If you want to reach, if you want to walk from this place to that place. So the word, the legs takes you there. Likewise, the Shastram also uses this prakriya, the method to arrive at bringing it to the truth. So prakriya is a methodology which is used in the Shastram as a pramana, you say, to arrive at the truth. So every text has got different methods of analysis. The first text described after we go through this is Tattva Bodha, which describes you the truth of the essence of you. It describes these elements, the element which is there, the five elements. Then the elementals describe. And how are you connected with this universe? Then it brings you a little bit closer to say that, okay, look, you are not this physical body, you are something different from this. And how are you connected with this universe? If you analyze closely our physical body also, see, the outside world has got this pancha bhuta. They are five elements. Air, water, fire, space, and so in the Taittiriya Upanishad also it says, Akashat Vayuhu Vayor Agnihi Agnir Apaha Adya Prithivi Oshadi Bhyo Annam Annat Purushaha Sava Esha Purusham Idameva Tasyeva Eva Sharira Atma. So there are words. So it describes the word, the way in which creation happened. And the Upanishad also tells the way it will get dissolved also. The Mahapralaya when happens, everything goes back in unmanifest state. First, Akasha came. From Akasha came Vayuhu, the space, the air. Because the air has to move within space only. The air cannot move independently. It has to say that, okay, the space is there. And the space, the Vayu moves across. Then from the Vayu, Agni, the fire came. From Agni, water, Apaha, water. Then earth. So this is the specific order which created. Our body also has got the same concept. We also has got space, physical space. We got our body space which is there. And we got Vayu also. We breathe, inhale, exhale. Air which is into the prana, the pancha pranas are there, which is operating within our body, is also connected with the outer vayu also. So space wise, we are connected with the space. Vayu, we are connected with the vayu which is outside going around. There is no vayu there. You cannot breathe, you will not be the existence. Then there is agni also inside the house, inside our body. Agni is what? Anything you digest. We eat lots of things. Whatever you go inside, there's a fire inside called Agni, which converts it to energy. Likewise, the fire also is outside. So you offer into the oblation of, you know, into the fire. And it, you can see that it actually burns. Anything. Even a stone also, if you put it in the fire also, for a bit of time, the stone also will become dark. It will disintegrate. So, there's also fire in the body also. There's a very famous verse in the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 4, verse 25. Brahma arpanam brahma avihi brahma atma brahma nahutam brahma ivatena kantavyam brahma karma samadhinaha. Says, so, brahma arpanam brahma avihi means to that brahma arpanam, I am the havis. So I am the person who is offering into my Brahma. So the food which you eat is the habits which you are offering yourself. So Brahma Arpanam. So I am offering to the Lord which is me. And Brahma Arpanam, Brahma Havis. So I am the Havis means you are the food which is the Havis. And where are we offering the Havis? Brahma Agnav. So in the Agni of the Brahman you are offering. Ahutam. Ahuti means you are offering. Ahuti is a word for Ahutam. And we offer the oblation about Kantavyam, Brahma Karma, Samadhinaha. So you say you offer all these things, and I'm saying Brahma Karma. So Samadhinaha means I am surrendering as ultimate offerer, and thereafter there's no more offering. See, if the offerer itself is offered ultimately, there's no offering at all. So there's an offerer, there's an offering, and an offered. So three things are involved. Anything. Here, the mantra actually is a cognitive, is a contemplation mantra. But every time before you eat your food, you are praying to the Bhagavan that let whatever I'm eating get digested. And let this be an offering to the Bhagavan. Let this be merged with the Bhagavan, with the Brahmatma. So the Brahma is not a Brahma, the Padapalar, not a creator. The Brahma is the ultimate Brahman of Srishti or the existence we talked about. So where? So then we got our own, so we discussed the Vayu which is there. Then we got Apaha. So Apaha means water. The shape of the body determines how much the water. Physical body which we have, some people are lean, some people are short, some people are thick, all things are there. They got no... So the water is there which is flowing inside the body that gives the shape of the body. When you grow older, when the person is about to latest changes, you can see the body shrinks. And you see, become thin. You can see the bones sometimes. All these things just goes in. Because the water is already gone. Water slowly starts acidic. And then the person passes away eventually. And then what it goes to the earth. Prithvi. Then you ultimately, whether you get cremated or whatever, it is actually goes into the final earth only. You cannot be throwing it into the air. So the cycle of creation, same thing, cycle, same starts. So from Akashad Vayuhu, Vayu Ragnihi, Agnir Apaha, Oshadibhyo Anna. So from Annat Purushaha. So the same thing is again what it's eaten by the again next person, again Purushaha, again another life starts. So the cycle of creation is continuous. There's no gap in between. So the vision of this Shastram, the vision says here, that there's a connection between you as individual, this pancha elements which are out there. And one has to understand this connection. This is the first step. So the prakriya or the method helps you to establish the connection between you as individual and how are you connected with this universe or the objects which are out there. Then the second text also is introduced called a Dhrigdrishya Viveka. It's a slightly advanced text where the author introduces a scene called the three seers. Or Drig means the ultimate seer. Drishya means see. And Vivekaha means the knowledge or the difference to know who is the seer and who is the seen. You see things, you perceive things, but who is that person or who is that object which makes you see these things? And how does the seeing happen? Is described elaborately in the text, which I am having a class every Thursday. So it is for people who already gone through the fundamental class. They already gone, they are already in the Bhagavad Gita class. And the Dhrigdrishya Viveka teaches us the method of segregating cognitively, understanding this truth, using this technology, this method. So the existence which you talked about, or the awareness, fullness, happiness, is only one word. But it has got different connotations and it's appearing as different objects in this universe. So nama rupa karma sahitam is jagat. So what is jagat? That which comes and goes. Jayate gachate iti jagat. That which comes and goes every day to you. If you are awake, right now we are all awake. This universe is existing for us, real. And we see things, we perceive things, we take this universe as real. But this universe should be existing in the same condition as it is. It should not have changed at all. When you come tomorrow, same time at 2 o'clock for the class, or next Sunday you come. It can't be, because same people are not there. Other person may come, somebody may not be there. So it shouldn't, it's not consistent. So when you go to sleep, this universe is not existing for you at all. You as a knower is also not there. There's nothing called a knower, a knowing or knowledge is also not there. We are blissfully ignorant that we don't even exist. All the problems which you face in daytime is not available to you during deep sleep state. Fortunately, the Bhagavan has given us this blessing in disguise, where at least for 8 hours a day or 6 hours a day when you sleep, you don't have to think about any of these problems. Otherwise, imagine that 24/7, if you keep on having these thoughts, life will be a very, very boring thing because there's no respite. So the Bhagavan has, we have this time as deep sleep state or the avastatrayaha. So we call it in Sanskrit avastatrayaha. Trayaha means three, avastaha means avastapadra, the mono state. So we got three, which is the deep waking state, dream state, and deep sleep state. Jagra, swapna, sushupti. Jagrat means you are awake. Swapna means you are in dream state. And Sushupti is a state where you are in deep sleep state. There's a fourth state or fourth thing called Turiya. It's not called a state because Turiya is the one which is the absolute truth or the absolute knower in which all these three states are known to you. How do you know that you slept well? Or how do you know that you are actually in dream state? Because when you wake up in the morning, you are able to recollect that I had a very bad dream. You may be, you have gone to bed 9 o'clock, 9:30, you have gone to bed, slept beautifully till 12:30. Suddenly you are in dream, in deep sleep, in dream state. You had a bad dream. You woke up from the bed, sweating in, profusely, and then you see things and you realize that, my God, it's just a dream and nothing really happened, everything's intact. So when you are in dream state also, this intellect or this Turiya was active. In your waking state also this is active, because that is what is telling you that, okay, look, I am active, I am seeing things, it's already there. Then after some time in your dreaming, when you created your own enterprise, your own view of the world, Jagat, you've got a nature world when you are the actor, you're the producer, you're the director, you're the screenwriter, songwriter, you're also the hero, heroine. You can do all sorts of things which you cannot do during waking state. You can only imagine you are seeing all these things during daytime. And then these vasanas which are there, incomplete vasanas, they go during dream state and starts to create a magical world for you. Where your physical body is not doing anything. Your physical body is still there, available there. But your mind is projecting this image of yourself where you are going outside, another world is created, an image is created, it's a projection. So the projection is always a mithya only, because the projection is never real. Likewise, in the waking state also, when we say this world is real, this world should be exactly same condition as it is tomorrow also. But it is not, because people change, objects change. Everything changes here. cannot change every day, every hour. But you will see gradually that things are always changing. They are not the same as what you think. Even the people who are also, we interact also change. So this cannot be a source of happiness. This cannot be true. So you negate, not this. Then you go to the dream state, you say, when you wake up, you say, my God, this is not real. So this is not this also. It can't be real. Because if it was real, then you should be available for, you'll be dreaming all the time. You would like to go back to dream state every day, but it's not possible. You cannot dream, right? You cannot say, look, I would like to dream possible throughout the day. I don't wake up at all. It's not possible. The prarabdha karma wakes you up. You go to deep sleep state. You sleep well after dreaming. You have a glass of water or whatever kandasashti kavacham you want to say. You had a bad dream, you say that. And you go to sleep. And you are now totally unaware about even you had a dream also at that time. But when you wake up in the morning, you are able to recollect all the three states. You knew that you went to bed. You had a very, I think I slept soundly for some time. Then I had this very bad dream. I woke up. And you're also able to recollect that you had a glass of water, you walked around also. And then you said, after that, I think I slept really well for 3 hours. I had a very good sleep after that, 3 hours. Now, who is telling you this? Who is the person telling you this, that you had all the three states? If it was a knower, it was in these three states, it can't be. Because that means there's some other person sitting there, or some other power which is there, which is always with you all the time. But it's appearing in three different states. It's appearing in three different forms, as waking state, dream state, and deep sleep state. Likewise, I'm just giving examples to you, the methodology. Likewise, all the things which you see here, you know, our own creation also. We have in different sizes, shapes, forms, objects which are there. Nama, Rupa, Karma, Rahitam. And they come in, they are only manifestation of only one truth, which is there. But we tend to forget that truth. And we try to associate this manifestation or this appearance as the ultimate truth. Thereby, we are not able to arrive at the final truth. Just like, you know, when you enjoy all the objects which are there, we think this enjoyment is permanent, this enjoyment is what life is all about. But this has to come to an end ultimately. When the person is about to pass away, he will say, what have I achieved? The question will come to him at the end at the lifetime. See, the person may not say to you. There's a very famous saying in Subrahmanya Bhujanga. That example, that this person is the deathbed. He has worked hard for entire life. He has amassed so much of wealth for his children. He has worked very hard. He has done all the charge of charity. And he is now on his deathbed. He is not able to get up. There is phlegm coming from his mouth. He can't speak because, you know, he's so old. That when he opens his mouth, phlegm comes out, cough comes out, he can't speak. His eyes are not very clearly seeing. He's in the final stages of passing away, you know, in the last couple of years, or 3 years, or 2 years. But everybody, all of us will go through the same thing, nothing to worry about. And death is something not in Granta to be afraid of. Because death also is like a long sleep, you don't wake up. Just like when you sleep every day, you wake up. Because there's a prarabdha karma waking you up. So if you woken up that day, means you still have got one more day of karma to exhaust. So you thank the Bhagavan for doing that. If you don't wake up, you don't know, you don't even know that you're going to wake up. Other person will know, but you don't know. That's the beauty of it. So there's nothing to be afraid in Vedanta about death. So Vedanta study will actually take away the fear of death in a way to understand cognitively. Because we have the fear of death always is there. Even for a jnani also, when the death comes, the fear will be there. But the fear will be ultimately be removed or dismissed, saying that this is only for the body. I am only, physical body is going to die. I am actually as a Shuddha Chaitanya or the sense I'm going back, I'm still part of the same thing. I do not have a separate existence outside of this body. This body is there, the body is going back to source. Like the Panchabhuta, I told you, the five elements are going back to the five elements. And the five elements are actually what is created, it's all part of the whole Srishti only. Time and space is also part of Brahman. It doesn't operate outside of Brahman or the reality. The division of time, we say time, is already a division, or you say this is a delimiter. I mean, this is start date and end date. And start time, end time, right? So when I say space also is constrained. It's also there. So time and space limitations are available for everything which is below the reality. For the reality, for the existence, for the true satyam, the time and space limitation is not there at all. Nor nama rupa karma rahitam. So we are nama rupa sahitam. Brahman is nama rupa rahitam. Means that which is not devoid of this. So this truth has to be understood, and this method of teaching helps us to arrive at this, the unity between our existence in this world and what is outside there, how we are connected. So in the next class, or what we will do, we will actually try to explore more of this connection, how this technique is used, and how a person should also study, and how to arrive at this truth also in this lesson. So we'll continue from this next class. So if you got any questions on this topic, see, this is, I'm actually now leaving the fundamentals, the Purushartha Nischaya, where you understood that you have to pursue these things. And you need to now step away that there's something called moksha hard to follow. Or moksha means what? Moksha is freedom. Freedom from what? Freedom from bondage. What is bondage? Bondage is a feeling of attachment. So what is attachment? So you need to arrive, all these questions should come in your mind. And how do I arrive at this? So this method is called Sampradaya method, or systematic way of unfolding step by step, leading into topic after topic, whereby you are able to understand the various terms used. Then we put together a whole picture saying this is how everything works together. You cannot draw a whole, you know, painting in one shot. You have to first use a brush stroke to first create some sketch first. Then the sketch has to be formalized first, then painted, then given a form. Then only you can understand the painting. See, when you go to an art gallery and you see the painting, you only see the finished product. But the finished product has gone through several stages of evolution. And thereby you are able to see the name. Likewise, we also have to go through this method. And there may be repetitions in this class. See, in Vedanta, there is nothing like called a new topic. Same will be repeated, but slowly and slowly there will be new topics introduced to give you more clarity. So from the previous two classes, you would have got a little bit more clarity about how we are connected, and what is that there's something else which we need to know, which we don't know yet. Before the class, we had an idea that we are only human beings. Then we came to know that there are four houses. Well, Purushartha Nishchaya is there. Uddala Arka. Is there something called Kama, Artha, Kama, Dharma, Moksha is there. Something called Moksha. How do you define Moksha? What is happiness? Now today we saw that our physical body is connected to this Panchabhuta. How they connect? And how all these things work together. Karma Yoga is an attitude. So slowly, slowly all these topics will come together. So I request you to be patient and assimilate what I am saying. If you got any questions on any topic, you can either WhatsApp me just like usual we do. If I can answer the question on the spot, which I think is relevant, I'll do that. If I think the question is too complicated to discuss in WhatsApp, I may not answer it. So don't think that I'm neglecting the question. I'm fully aware about what you're asking also. And we will cover the topic in in subsequent discussions. This my teacher says that you have to keep on listening. I've been listening for 8 years. I still listen. And though I'm a teacher also, I'm still a student to my teacher. So, because till the person passes away, one has to do this nidhyasanam. So, shravanam, maranam, nidhyasanam is to be continued till the person ultimately there. You cannot say that I stop studying. Because the day you say I stop studying, that day you will not be able to remember everything. So, because our mind is so abstract, we need to keep redoing, keep on doing. Whatever you do, you have to keep practicing, practicing, practicing. Till it becomes your lifeline. It comes naturally. So, wherever you go, the Shastra Buddhi will come there. You don't take a book. So, I don't take any book or anything with me when I go there. The topic flows because there's a understanding of the whole concept. Likewise, you also will have a one-day view that all these are there. You don't need to have anything. Your Shastra is with you all the time as a guideline for you. So, with this, I conclude today's class. Any questions, as I told you, please WhatsApp me and we'll go through.
Thank you, Shankar.
Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Harih Om Tat Sat. Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harih Om.
So the recording is available for this on the website called Vedagyana. I'll send you the recording also. See, the WhatsApp quality may not be very good. So I'll send you the link for my blog, which has got all the topics besides this. So you are free to navigate to any page or any topic of interest. There are lots of classes in Bhagavad Gita, Bhajan Govindam, which are already uploaded in the website. And Purusha Suktam is also there. Dhritarashtra Rekha is there. Manisha Panchakam is there. So lots of topics are done before. You are welcome to browse it, download it, listen to it at your own pace.
Okay. Oh. Shankar, the recording WhatsApp la anupi kuduthar mudiyuma adha konjam convenient ah irukku.
I can do that. But sometimes the recording may be big. There's a limitation on the WhatsApp capacity. 16 MB is the maximum I can upload into the WhatsApp. The moment
we are able to hear it again and again, you know. That's advantage. Yeah.
I'll do that.
Again,
okay, I'll do that.
Okay.
Oh.
Thank you. Thanks, Roger.